Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Imagine two individuals. Okay, both are showing those early signs of amyloid beta, you know, that key protein linked to Alzheimer's. But for one person, the disease seems to just take off, tau tangles spreading really rapidly through their brain. While for the other, it's more like a slow, gentle creep. What hidden factors could possibly explain such a critical difference in how Alzheimer's progresses?
Yeah, it's a question that has really puzzled researchers and clinicians for a long time. Why does the pathology vary so much between people? And maybe more importantly, how could understanding these differences, really getting a handle on them, change how we approach treatment, fundamentally change it?
Right. And today, we're diving into a fascinating new study that shines a light on exactly this. It starts to reveal how our basic biology, specifically things like our sex and certain genetic variations, can dramatically influence how Alzheimer's actually takes hold and spreads inside the brain. But before we unpack all these insights, we do want to give some special recognition. Today, we celebrate the work of Joseph Giorgio and William J. Jagast, and of course, their dedicated colleagues. They've really advanced our understanding of how sex and specific genetic factors can interact and how that influences tau deposition in Alzheimer's disease.
Okay, so to set the stage a bit, let's quickly recap the standard model for how Alzheimer's is thought to progress. It's often called the canonical cascade. So the basic idea is that the first thing that happens, the trigger, is the buildup of amyloid beta protein, This accumulation then sort of accelerates the buildup of another protein, tau. This starts typically in a key memory area, the entorhinal cortex, the EC. From there, tau spreads out into other brain regions, especially the neocortex. And it's this wider spread of tau that really leads to the cognitive decline we see in Alzheimer's.
Okay, that makes sense as a general pathway.
Right. Now, while some rare dominant genetic forms of Alzheimer's follow this path pretty predictably, the common form, sporadic late-onset AD, is way more complex. It's influenced by, well, a whole mix of genetic factors, lifestyle factors. It makes the progression much less straightforward, you know?
And that complexity is exactly what this study gets into. So when we talk about these individual variations, are there specific genetic factors that really stand out as being particularly important in shaping how this unfolds?
Absolutely. I mean, the strongest genetic risk factor we know for sporadic late onset AD is the APOE4 allele. If you have just one copy, your risk can be like over 3 times higher than someone with the more common A4 allele. But if you have two copies, if you're an APOE4 homozygote, that risk can shoot up to over 13 times higher. It's a huge effect.
13 times? Wow.
Yeah. And what the study really underscores is that APOE4 isn't just about amyloid beta buildup. It seems to have these additional effects, maybe direct effects on tau itself, influencing how it gets phosphorylated or how it spreads. So it's involved downstream, too.
Okay, so APOE4 is a big one. Are there other genetic players involved here?
Yes, definitely. Another important one is the TREM2 gene. You can think of TREM2 as a protein found on the surface of the brain's immune cells, the microglia. It's kind of like a sensor for them. Mm. It's really critical for how these microglia respond to Alzheimer's pathology, like clearing up debris. Certain rare changes or polymorphisms in TREM2 can make it less functional.
So the immune response is weakened, essentially.
Sort of, yeah, or at least altered. Variants like R47, which, for example, are linked to a significantly increased AD risk, maybe around 2.7 times higher. And the thinking is that this less functional TREM2 might actually promote tau seeding and spreading, perhaps by messing with the inflammatory response.
And then there's the role of sex, which you mentioned. That seems like a really consistent finding in Alzheimer's research, doesn't it?
It really is. Females generally have a higher incidence of dementia later in life, and postmortem studies consistently show more tau tangles in women's brains. And in vivo imaging, so brain scans on living people, backs this up. Women tend to show higher levels of tau and faster accumulation rates, even when they have similar levels of amyloid beta compared to men.
So for the same amount of amyloid, women might have more tau.
Exactly. And this raises a really crucial question that this paper tackles head on. Are these sex differences mainly about the initial buildup of tau in that entorhinal cortex region? Or is it more about how tau spreads later on? And importantly, could these differences be linked somehow to the immune response, maybe involving TREM2?
Understanding all these variable effects feels incredibly important right now, especially with the new anti-amyloid drugs coming online. Mm. We've seen lecanemab and donanemab showing promise in slowing cognitive decline by clearing amyloid.
Right.
But the results weren't the same for everyone. There were reports of varying treatment effects in women depending on the specific trial outcomes. And here's a really key point. For those APOE4 homozygotes, the ones with two copies of the risk gene, neither drug showed significant effects on the main primary outcome measure. So this study could really help us start to quantify why we might be seeing these different responses to treatment.
Definitely. Okay, let's talk about how they did this. The researchers used a really smart, robust approach. They combined data from three big, well-known studies. There was ADNI, the Alzheimer's Disease Neuroimaging Initiative, A4, which is the anti-amyloid treatment in asymptomatic Alzheimer's study, and HABS-HD, the Health and Aging Brain Study Health Disparities. Pulling these together gave them a large sample size, over 1,300 people in total, which they split into a discovery group and then a separate replication group to check their findings.
And these weren't just questionnaires, right? They had detailed biological data.
Oh, yes. All participants had advanced brain imaging PET scans to measure both their amyloid beta levels and their tau levels throughout the brain. And critically, they also had whole genome sequencing data, giving them detailed information about each person's genetic makeup, including APOE and TREM2 status.
Okay, so great data. What about the analysis? You mentioned it was innovative.
Yeah, they use my thing called causal path modeling. It's a sophisticated statistical method using structural equation models, or SEM. Mm. Basically, it lets you test hypotheses about how different factors influence each other along a proposed pathway. So their model assumed that cascade we talked about. A deposition happens first, which leads to A-related tau in the EC, which then leads to tau spreading into the neocortex.
What is it, steps in a process?
Exactly. And then they tested how things like sex, the number of APOE4 alleles, someone had 0, 1, or 2, and whether they carried a TREM2 risk variant influenced each step of that pathology. And importantly, they tried to separate out effects that are just mediated by amyloid levels versus effects that might be happening in addition to amyloid, like direct effects on tau accumulation or spread, even after accounting for ApoE. And for instance, they did some clever things like grouping ApoE levels to look at interactions with EC while still using the continuous ApoE measure as a main factor. It let them probe these relationships really carefully.
Okay, so a powerful approach to tease apart these complex interactions. What did they actually find? What were the key results?
All right, let's dive into the findings. First, looking at what influences amyloid beta levels themselves. As you'd probably expect, age and having APOE4 alleles had significant effects. More APOE4 alleles meant higher APOE levels. That's the dose-dependent effect. Interestingly, in their main discovery sample, they didn't find a significant effect of sex or TREM2 status directly on APOE levels, though one of the replication cohorts, HABS-HD, did show females having higher APOE. So maybe a slight nuance there.
Okay, so APOE4 and age are the big drivers for A itself, but what about tau, especially that early stage in the entorhinal cortex?
Right, this is where it gets really interesting. When they looked at tau in the EC, that primary accumulation spot, here's the crucial insight. Even when they accounted for the amount of amyloid beta present, so for a given level of APOE, both APOE4 homozygotes, those with two copies, and females had significantly more tau in their entorhinal cortex.
Wow. So it's not just that they have more amyloid driving it, their brains seem more susceptible to tau buildup early on.
That's exactly what it suggests. And this wasn't just a fluke. It was a strong, consistent finding they replicated in their second independent cohort. And there was another twist. They found an interaction between TREM2 and sex. Specifically, female carriers of a TREM2 risk variant seem to have the highest levels of EC tau.
Okay, so sex, APOE4 homozygosity, and maybe this TREM2 interaction are really dialing up that initial tau pathology. What about the next step, the spread of tau into the rest of the brain, the neocortex?
Good question. So moving downstream to neocortical tau, which reflects that spread, they found that for a given level of tau already in the entorhinal cortex, APOE4 homozygotes in individuals carrying a TREM2 risk variant had significantly more tau spread into the neocortex.
So not only do they maybe get more tau starting out, but it also spreads more easily in those groups.
Precisely. It suggests tau moves more readily or propagates more efficiently downstream in people with those genetic factors. They also confirmed a significant interaction between APOE4 and TREM2 here. If you had both a TREM2 risk variant and at least one APOE4 allele, you showed significantly more neocortical tau spread, a kind of double hit. But interestingly, once they accounted for all these upstream factors, the A levels, the EC tau levels, the genetics, they didn't find a significant direct effect of sex on the rate of neocortical tau spread itself.
Huh. So sex seems more influential on the initial tau accumulation in the EC, given the amyloid levels, but less so on the subsequent rate of spread.
That seems to be what the data points towards in this analysis, yes.
This really paints a picture of highly variable genetic effects playing out differently along that cascade. It's not just one disease progressing the same way in everyone.
Absolutely. I mean, these findings give us really compelling evidence for substantial heterogeneity, real differences in how tau pathology unfolds depending on your sex, your APOE4 status, and your TREM2 status. This is a huge step towards, you know, truly understanding personalized Alzheimer's progression.
So what are the big implications then, especially when we think about treatment?
Okay, let's unpack that. For APOE4 homozygotes, the data shows strong effects on both early EC tau accumulation and the later neocortical spread, even beyond the effects mediated by amyloid. This strongly suggests the APOE4 protein itself is doing something profound to influence tau pathology directly. And the clinical implication here is pretty significant. It suggests that people with two copies of APOE4 might need to be treated earlier with anti-amyloid therapies.
Is it lower amyloid levels than other groups?
Potentially, yes. Because their biology seems to make them more vulnerable, their outdrives higher tau more efficiently, and their tau spreads more aggressively. This insight could really help explain why those anti-amyloid trials showed weaker or even absent benefits for APOE4 homozygotes. Maybe the intervention was too late for them or needed to be tailored differently.
Right. It's about trying to get ahead of that accelerated pathology curve for that specific group. What about the TREM2 findings?
The TREM2 results suggest that variations in how this microglial protein functions play a direct role in how tau spreads from the EC to the neocortex. The likely mechanism involves aberrant microglial activity. If TREM2 isn't fully functional, it might disrupt normal inflammatory signaling and somehow actually promote the transmission of tau between brain cells. And that interaction between APOE4 and TREM2 is also key. Having both risk factors seems to compound the effect on neocortical tau, suggesting maybe their combined impact on microglia or other pathways is particularly detrimental.
And revisiting the sex differences, what's the takeaway there?
For the sex differences, the clearest signal is that females appear more susceptible to that early tau deposition in the entorhinal cortex for any given level of amyloid. So clinically, this might mean females could require anti-amyloid treatment at lower aberrant thresholds than males to get similar benefits in reducing that initial tau pathology. Or perhaps future trial designs might need to consider screening for both amyloid and tau, especially in women, to make sure their tau pathology isn't already more advanced than expected based on amyloid alone. This could potentially shed light on why outcomes might have differed for women between, say, the lecanemab and donanemab trials, as donanemab did include tau PET screening.
That makes a lot of sense. This is really groundbreaking work, revealing such specific nuanced roles for these factors. But as always in science, it's important to consider the limitations, right? To think critically about what this study tells us and what maybe doesn't yet.
Absolutely. That's crucial. First off, this is a cross-sectional study. It's like taking a snapshot in time across many people. It's powerful for finding associations, but it can't fully capture the longitudinal dynamics, how these things change within one person over years. We infer the progression, but we don't directly observe it start to finish in the same individuals here.
Okay, so trajectory is inferred, not directly measured over time.
Exactly. And while the interpretations about the anti-amyloid trials are really compelling and fit the data well, they are still interpretations based on these findings. They'll need more direct validation, perhaps in prospective studies or analyses of trial data itself. Also, technically, they grouped several different rare TREM2 risk variants together. This assumes they all have similar biological effects, which might not be perfectly true and could slightly underestimate the impact of specific variants. The researchers acknowledged this, noting it would likely bias results towards finding no effect, so the fact they did find significant effects is still strong, but it's a nuance.
Right, and any sample size issues.
Well, the overall sample was large, which is a major strength. But the number of APOE4 homozygotes, while sufficient to find effects, is naturally smaller than the other groups. However, the fact that they replicated the key ATOE4 findings in two completely independent cohorts gives us much greater confidence in those results. Replication is key.
Okay, so limitations acknowledged, but the core findings seem robust, especially with the replication.
I think so. Overall, this deep dive really reinforces that Alzheimer's progression isn't this single monolithic path. It's truly a complex interplay. Our specific genetic makeup, like APOE and TREM2 status, and even our biological sex, can dramatically shape when and how tau pathology builds up and spreads. And that fundamentally changes our individual risk profile and, quite possibly how we might respond to different treatments.
So going back to those two individuals we imagined at the start, the one with rapid progression, the other slower, this study gives us real biological reasons why those different paths might exist. It pinpoints specific roles for sex and genes at different stages. Which leads to the big question. What does this all mean for the future of personalized medicine in Alzheimer's disease, especially as the field pushes towards intervening earlier, before a significant cognitive decline really sets in? This episode was based on an open-access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoy this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science Base by Base.